Hello, welcome to the Rethink Your Understanding podcast, where we dive deep into transformative insights on leadership, agile, lean, DevOps, value stream management, and flow engineering. I'm your human host, Phil Clark. I've been leading technology teams for over two decades in both eras of software delivery. In each episode, the AI-generated hosts dive into key concepts and insights from my articles and blog posts. While this conversation is generated by AI, there may be occasional errors or misinterpretations that differ slightly from the original material. Join me as we explore and improve our understanding of digital transformation. I hope this inspires you to read the original article and reach out to me to collaborate. You will find a link to the article in the show notes. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please like, rate, and follow us on your podcast provider of choice. Your support helps us reach more listeners, and every review counts. Stay tuned for more thought-provoking content, and thanks for being part of our podcast experiment and journey. This episode explores the complexities of merging two distinct engineering organizational models after an acquisition. It highlights the friction that arises when one part of the organization uses small, self-managed, cross-functional teams with distributed leadership, while the other adheres to a traditional engineering manager model, where a single manager oversees people, delivery, and agile practices. The core challenges lies in unifying the job titles and responsibilities without disrupting high-performing teams or ignoring the cultural and architectural context that shape their original effectiveness. True alignment requires prioritizing fit over rigid familiarity and considering a hybrid approach that respects existing strengths and avoids sacrificing autonomy, psychological safety, for superficial consistency. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take your source material and really dig into the most important insights. We're here to help you cut through the noise, get informed fast, maybe with some surprising facts too. Today, we're diving into another piece by Phil Clark, from his website, rethinkyourunderstanding.com. And this one's interesting. It feels more like a specific leadership story he lived through.
That's right. It's a great look into, the messy reality of merging engineering orgs, specifically this challenge of integrating, two totally different team structures and role definitions. The article is called When Team Structure Collides with Role Alignment.
Right. So you've got these two delivery models, both kind of working in their own bubbles, and suddenly they need to be, one thing. And there's going to be a big human element there.
Definitely. So our mission today is really to unpack that scenario Phil lays out. We want to pull out the key challenges, the insights he gained, and look at the potential ways forward he talks about.
And just a quick note for you listening, this whole conversation is based on Phil's article. We're doing our best to stick to what he wrote, but, conversations wander. We might explore things from slightly different angles. So for the full picture, all the details, definitely check out the original article on his website, rethinkyourunderstanding.com. It's worth the read. Okay, so let's get into it.
So the basic setup Phil describes is advising this engineering org right after a merger. And they basically inherited two very different ways of operating within their teams, already up and running.
Yeah, and the difference is pretty clear, right? One model was these small cross-functional teams, long-term teams, self-managed leadership, kind of spread out.
Exactly, like truly self-managing. And then the other model from the acquiring company was more of your traditional engineering manager setup, the EM model. In that world, you've got one manager juggling everything people stuff, delivery oversight, agile practices, often being the main accountable person for what the team produces.
Okay. Now, the goals the exec leader set out they sound good, right? Unified job roles, clear up performance ambiguity, fair development for everyone, a single career path built on care. You can't argue with that.
Absolutely. Those are worthy goals. But here's the kicker, right? The big insight Phil shares in the article is that just aligning titles and writing new job descriptions on paper, it doesn't actually fix the underlying issues.
Right, if the structures underneath are still different.
Exactly. But if you don't tackle the team design itself, the architecture they support, how roles really work day to day, the delivery structure, you just kind of sweep the problems under the rug.
And then what happens? Does it just bubble up later?
Yeah, the article says it just creates this hidden tension. confusion, friction,
oh, yeah.
especially around careers and how people actually get work done.
So it wasn't about saying this model is better.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Phil really stresses this point. It's not about being right. It's about being aligned. And getting truly aligned, well, the article makes it clear that takes time. Planning. Honest talks. You need clarity and collaboration, not just speed.
That sounds like it runs straight into that cultural challenge Phil mentioned. If the leaders in the bigger company hadn't really worked with self-managed teams before.
Oh, definitely. Their perspective is fixed, right? Based on their own success. The article notes this kind of legacy thinking can really block progress. If you just look at how the models are different on the surface, but don't dig into why they evolved that way. You know, the root causes, what kind of systems they supported you, risk breaking things.
Especially those high performing teams that were already humming along in their own structure.
Exactly. And I remember the article saying the top exec initially wanted it to be more organic, like let shared understanding drive it, don't just force it.
Yeah, that was the idea. Clarity first. But Phil points out the real friction often came from, well, other senior leaders who had maybe more fixed views.
Right. And Phil's take in the article isn't about saying one model is always better. It's more about highlighting the specific problems that arise when you try to centralize accountability without the right context, and how even well-meaning integration can mess up teams that were actually working really well.
Okay, so zooming out a bit, why is this kind of integration challenge so critical for an organization to get right?
Well, the article explains it pretty clearly. After a merger, it makes total sense to want to unify roles, career paths, performance reviews. It's smart because inconsistency breeds confusion, right?
Mm-hmm.
It slows down promotions, introduces bias. Think about it. If you have two managers with the same engineering manager title, but one leads a traditional team and the other supports a self-managed setup, their jobs are actually worlds apart.
And trying to evaluate them fairly becomes almost impossible. Subjective?
Totally. It's unfair to the managers, unfair to their engineers. Expectations are all over the place. So the article brings it back to those initial goals, unified roles, keep people from leaving, keep the good teams performing. The goals were fine.
But the approach, focusing on titles first, missed the mark.
Yeah, it didn't address the core tension, which the article frames as, how can you use one career framework when the actual team structures and the responsibilities baked into them are fundamentally different?
That's the friction point.
That's exactly it. And to really get that, we need to look a bit closer at those two models Phil describes.
Okay, let's do that. First up, the EM model from the main org. How did the article lay that out?
So it's very much one EM as the central hub. They handle the people management, they oversee delivery, often drive the agile side of things, work with product. Critically, they're accountable for the team's output and individual engineer performance.
Often the tech lead, too.
Yeah, the article mentioned that's common, usually managing maybe 6 to 10 engineers. And a key thing the article points out, in this model, the EM often owns agile, like no dedicated scrum master, same for quality, often no embedded QA.
So it all rolls up to the EM, sometimes called the iron triad, but maybe more like the EM becomes the bottleneck.
That's kind of the risk the article highlights, yeah. Centralized accountability. Now, compare that to the self-managed model from the acquired company.
Got it that way.
These were described as long-lived teams, maybe a bit bigger, 8 to 12 people. And the crucial part, they had all the roles needed inside the team. Engineers, QA, product owner, agile lead, or scrum master. Everything needed to deliver on their own.
Like little self-contained units?
Kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the big difference the article stresses is that responsibilities were intentionally distributed across those roles, not piled onto one person.
So what did the EM do in that model?
They acted more like career coaches, mentors. They might manage, say, 5 to 7 engineers, but those engineers could be on different teams. And often, these EMs were still senior engineers themselves writing code.
So they weren't directly owning the team's delivery metrics or day-to-day process?
Not in that same centralized way, no. Agile was handled by the dedicated role. Delivery ownership was seen as a team thing. The article notes these teams often aligned with specific microservices or business domains, you know, Conway's Law again. And they worked well with that kind of autonomous architecture if there was investment in clarity, trust, and lightweight governance. That's key.
So, okay, the big difference boils down to accountability.
Right.
Centralized in one, distributed in the other, even if they cover the same basic functions.
Exactly. And Phil connects this directly to Conway's Law in the article. Your systems reflect your communication paths. Centralized accountability makes a kind of sense for a big monolithic system where coordination is complex.
But if you've got modular services,
then distributing accountability to teams that own those service boundaries makes a lot more sense. It can speed things up, reduce overhead, because the team has what it needs.
And this isn't just about org charts or code, right? It shapes the culture.
Hugely. Centralized models can offer clarity, maybe good for less mature teams, but the risk is reduced autonomy. Teams kind of waiting to be told what to do, learn dependence.
Whereas the distributed model demands autonomy, so psychological safety becomes non-negotiable.
Absolutely. Teams need to feel safe to make calls, to try things, maybe even fail sometimes, knowing they have support. When it works well, you get real ownership, real speed. But the article warns, without that clarity, trust, and support, it can just be chaos. What's fascinating is that simple question, what does an EM own, cracks open this much deeper question. Does our team structure actually fit our architecture and the culture we want?
And this is exactly where trying to standardize just the title started to cause problems, according to the article. On the surface, align the roles. But underneath, engineering manager meant completely different things.
Precisely. In the EM-led world, the EM was expected to own it all. People, delivery, agile process, velocity, tech direction, the buck stopped there.
But in the self-managed world,
the EM was primarily that career coach, the mentor, maybe still a senior coder, agile, handled by someone else, delivery, a shared team responsibility. No single person owned team performance in that way.
Yeah.
Now think about the impact, like the article lays out. If you build your performance reviews, your promotion process, around that all-encompassing EM definition,
you automatically put the EMs from the self-managed background at a disadvantage.
Or you pressure successful teams to change how they fundamentally operate just to fit a job title description. That's where the harm comes in.
And it's not just theoretical harm. The article says you see it in performance reviews, in hiring decisions, career planning. It eventually starts to break how teams function.
It does. It ripples out. In those centralized models, maybe teams start deferring decisions upwards again, even if they could make them. Autonomy gets chipped away.
Even if it wasn't intentional. While the self-managed teams had built up that muscle memory of solving problems together.
Yes, exactly. They had that psychological safety. But then leadership comes in and redefines roles based on a title, ignoring that established dynamic. Even those strong teams might hesitate. Autonomy suffers because an external system is imposing control where clarity already existed, just in a distributed way.
The article makes it sound like this friction becomes really tangible. It affects who gets hired, who gets promoted, how people feel about their work.
And according to Phil in the article, one of the toughest parts of change is like, this isn't the technical stuff, it's the culture.
Yeah.
It's the legacy thinking. Even well-meaning leaders can resist new ways if they're too attached to their past successes.
Yeah, the article had some pretty stark examples of that.
Like the big decision itself.
Yeah.
Right. Saying flat out they wouldn't shift more teams to self-manage because it seemed too resource intensive. And insisting the smaller teams had to adopt the EM model. That's a choice based on a familiar frame.
Or that VP comment Phil heard afterwards. Look, I've used the EM model my whole career. It works. Not malicious, but just confidence in the past, perhaps blinding them to what might fit the current situation better.
Exactly. Transformation needs curiosity, Phil argues, not just confidence in old patterns.
Mm.
And then there was that other comment, the one questioning Phil's background.
Right. Has Phil ever been a software engineer? Ouch.
The article frames it as revealing that mindset. If your experience isn't like mine, maybe your perspective isn't valid.
It shows how personal history can really cloud judgment about structure and what's best for the organization now. Dismissing something unfamiliar, even if it's working because it doesn't fit the old playbook, that limits potential.
And it ties right back to that quote Phil used. Great leaders aren't defined by how long they've done something. They're defined by how often they're willing to rethink it. Powerful stuff.
Definitely. But the article is also careful not to say self-managed teams are inherently superior, right? They need the right environment.
Absolutely. They're not a silver bullet. The article lists the necessary conditions pretty clearly. Team boundaries need to match the system architecture Conway's law again. Teams need all the roles. Leadership has to genuinely trust them. Clear expectations on ownership, accountability, feedback loops. And you need to invest in things like agile coaching, systems thinking.
So autonomy isn't chaos, it's a different kind of structure.
Exactly. Distributed, but it still needs rigor. And this leads to a crucial point. If organizations just assume self-managed teams will work without that support, they fail. But equally damaging if they try to impose tight centralized control on teams that already have those conditions and are succeeding. they risk breaking what's actually working well. Dismantling a working model just to make titles consistent without supporting the necessary conditions. That's sacrificing results for the sake of neatness.
And the article mentions the challenge of finding some kind of middle ground, a hybrid approach during the transition.
It does. The initial push Phil described was about picking one winner. But the article suggests a better path is understanding what each model needs and what you genuinely lose by forcing one into the other's mold.
And in this specific story, the decision was made to move towards the EM model eventually. So Phil's role became supporting that shift, but trying to do it smartly.
Right. Minimizing disruption, keeping the good stuff where possible, honoring the intent of the change, not just blindly copying the structure wholesale.
Which means asking those tougher questions the article raises, like, can we actually implement this EM model everywhere without breaking team autonomy or messing up how work flows? Do we really need an EM for every single team if it fragments things or adds layers? Can we define the EM role in a way that respects the strengths already present in those self-managed teams?
Because the article stresses that the best organizations aren't rigid. They design structures that are fit for purpose for the work, the system, the people.
Which might mean a blended approach.
Very possibly. The article suggests exploring that. Maybe some teams keep EMs, others use distributed leadership. Maybe agile roles depend on team maturity. Maybe career paths can actually accommodate different types of EMs, as long as the expectations are clear and performance is judged in context.
So it's not necessarily either alignment or autonomy. It's about designing for both.
That seems to be the argument. Designing for both, based on the actual needs. It's harder, sure. A hybrid model might not look perfectly clean on an org chart, but the article suggests it's often way better than forcing consistency that kills productivity and morale.
So really, at the core of this whole thing, it's about unifying without destroying what's good.
That's the challenge. That desire to standardize comes from a good place, usually. Clarity, fairness. But the friction happens, like the article shows, when titles get aligned, but the underlying structures and cultures are ignored. What really hits home from Phil's story, as summarized in the article, are those lessons. It's not about the titles, it's the mismatched expectations. Structure should follow architecture, not just tradition. You need psychological safety and autonomy for good teams. Past success can be a blind spot, and great teams can thrive in either model, EM-led, or self-managed if it's clear, intentional, and well-supported.
So there's no single perfect model, but there's maybe a right model for the specific context, the moment, the product, the architecture.
Exactly. And an integration like this, it's way more than just moving boxes around. It's a chance to really define what the engineering org wants to be, focusing on curiosity, on outcomes, on respecting what works. That's how you build something unified that can actually scale without losing flow, clarity, or trust.
And the article leaves it a bit open-ended, right? Saying the outcome depends on time and, crucially, on people's attitudes. Okay, so if we were to boil down the key takeaways from Phil's article, what would they be? First, EM and self-managed models, they're not the same thing with different labels, fundamentally different.
Right. And second, just standardizing titles without looking at the context, that can really hurt teams and careers.
Third, that misalignment, it directly chips away at autonomy and psychological safety, creates confusion.
Fourth, Conway's law is real. Structure should reflect architecture, ideally.
Fifth, maybe a hybrid approach, mixing models based on what fits, is actually the better way, especially during change.
And finally, sixth, you can actually guide a transition while still protecting the parts of the organization that are already working well, even if they look different.
Wow. Okay, that was a really fascinating dive into just how complex organizational design can be. Leadership, structure, expectations. It really shows how the human side and old habits can impact even well-meaning clans.
It really does. It's a great reminder that what works before isn't always the answer for what's next.
Yeah.
You know, and that real curiosity, that willingness to rethink is just critical for leaders navigating change.
So for you listening, what does this bring up? Maybe your own organization is going through something similar, or maybe you're just thinking about how these big structural decisions impact teams every day.
Yeah, maybe consider that provocative thought from Phil's experience.
Yeah.
How often are you really willing to question what you know works, especially when you see something unfamiliar that seems to be effective for others?
Definitely something to chew on. We hope this deep dive into Phil Clark's article gave you some useful insights, maybe sparked some new thinking. And remember, the full piece is on rethinkyourunderstanding.com. Thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive.
Until next time.